Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster, and if you hear a loud chirp intermittently, that is Mac McIntyre's CO2 alarm that's going off. So
it's not mine. It's the one in the hallway outside.
The one in the hallway outside. Okay. So
I replaced the batteries in mine.
Oh, man, nice. Good for you. Yeah, you are always carbon conscious. If anybody reduces his carbon footprint, it's Mac McIntyre, I think I would say that.
Sure.
So, Mac is here. Hello, Mac.
Hi.
That's kind of a half-hearted greeting. Are you sucking up too much CO2 as we speak?
Maybe I am.
Do we need to build you one of those scrubbers from Apollo 13? I don't know, they built with all that crap. Let's see, Eric Ashersleger's here.
Hi there.
And Daryl Loomis.
Hello.
All right, let's just jump into it. Mac, we'll kick off with you. Anything to report?
Let's see. What have I been up to? You know, I said I would make it out to the theaters to see Elysium, but I just didn't have time.
Nah, too bad.
Yeah. So, boy, this is an exciting way to start off the podcast, but not much going on in my corner of the woods.
All right. All right.
We didn't talk about the Boston Comic Con, but I went to that when I was here a couple weeks ago.
Nice. And anyone, did you rub elbows with anyone of note?
Not really. The Boston Comic Con is very much focused on just comics. You know, all the other comics,
okay.
They get all the movie stars and The Walking Dead, but no, it's just comics. So, Jerry Conway was there. I got his autograph. That was really cool. The big star of the show was Scott Snyder, who's currently writing Batman. But you had to get a special advance ticket to get his signature, and the line was like all the way around the building. So I decided to pass in Scott Snyder. And also,
I hope you don't regret that.
Mac. Yeah. George Perez was there. He had a long line, too. And I'm a big fan of artist Joe Eisma, who draws a really great comic for Image called Morning Glory. And I got his autograph and a sketch as well. So that was pretty cool. And just basically spent a lot of money and saw a lot of crazy costumes.
Nice. All right. Eric, speaking of crazy costumes, Eric Ashersleger, what have you been up to?
Oh, man. Besides my award-winning cosplay.
That's right. What are you doing this week?
I'll let you imagine who or what, or what food item I
I'm going to guess you're doing Moulin Rouge this week, right?
No, I don't know. I can't think of anything funny.
That's all right. That's
terrible.
Okay. I know you've got the end of the world on the mind, right?
I do. This is my Christmas, my summer Christmas coming up here. It's sort of like, you know, everything, this put it in terms maybe, Dave, that you can relate to.
Yes.
This is the world's end is my Dark Knight Rises, my Desolation of Smog.
Nice.
You know, this is, you know. So this
You're Saved by the Bell Hawaiian style.
Exactly.
Okay.
I hope so. I can only hope that it ends up being
it is
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, I am hyped as well. It's getting like pretty awesome reviews too.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything bad about it. I think it's weird because considering it's summer movies aren't always great, but I think it's telling that it at one point was supposed to be an October release and got moved up. So I'm not thinking of it as a summer movie. Not that that necessarily is a mark of quality. A lot of good movies do come out in the summertime, but This is a good one. So anyway, yes, I'm all set for that. I've ordered the soundtrack and getting that tomorrow.
Nice.
Listen to that ahead of time.
Oh, all right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's got a lot of 90s Brit pop, and I enjoy that stuff anyway. So.
Ooh, there you go.
Oh, that's chirp. Okay.
That's like our Academy Award. You're talking too long. Get off the stage.
No, I know. But by the end of this episode, I will be Pavlovianly trained.
Right.
I don't know what. Every time I hear that chirp, I'm going to do something. I did do something else exciting.
Yes.
Last week when I wasn't on the show, I was busy at the movie theater, not seeing a new summer release, but going to Riff Tracks Live.
Ooh, yeah.
This is pretty cool. I've never been to one of these live simulcasts before. Didn't actually see the Riff Tracks guys, of course, some of the Mystery Science Theater folks who've gone on and are doing this other riffing project. But it was basically, they were live, I think, down in Nashville, and it was simulcast to theaters all over the country.
Oh, cool.
And so I went with my dad, a little fun outing, not by myself, which is a rarity for the theater, but it was fun. And, it was really cool. It was all part of it. I guess the Kickstarter they did to get the rights to a bigger movie. Because, normally you have to secure the rights to show a big movie in the theater, so they can riff it. I think their original Kickstarter goal was to get Twilight. Thankfully, they could not afford Twilight. So instead, they got Starship Troopers.
Really?
Yeah, which is a movie that I like, and so right. I wasn't sure what was going to be like seeing them, you know, riff on a movie that I like. But turns out it was a great combination.
It was a lot of riffable movie.
It is, even though it's great, it's still very very riffable. They did a great job. It was fun. You know, we got there, you know, like half hour early, and they did their own screen scenes, pre-show slideshow deal, you know, with all their other kind of jokey made up facts and, movie quotes and all that kind of stuff. So that was a lot of fun. You know, they had a series of anagrams. And it was like, there was an anagram and it was clearly, Olympus Has Fallen, but the answer was White House Down.
Ah.
Stuff like that, you know. Gotcha. And they had, you know, Movie Mistakes was the header, and it just said Christmas Jones. That kind of stuff. So, anyway, funny stuff. And then the movie started. It was a lot of fun. Definitely, it's the first time I'd seen essentially a Mystery Science Theater episode or a riffed movie with a big crowd like that. And there was a lot of laughter. You could tell that it was infectious because I know my dad laughed jokes that he did not get.
Okay.
Like I know he doesn't know who Slippy the Toad is, for instance, but he laughed anyway. So you could tell that he was into it, and I was too. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Oh, nice.
They're doing another. Actually, they're doing a rebroadcast essentially of the Starship Troopers riff, you know, event in September. So if you missed it somewhere and you a theater that's close enough by is doing it again, you should check it out. And then in October they're doing another live one. They're doing Night of the Living Dead. So we might go check that out. So it was a lot of fun.
Very good. All right.
And I'm done. Right with the chirp. I wish instead of a CO2 detector, it was like a helium detector. And like as the episode went on, Max was higher and higher.
A helium say something? So will we expect the World's End review next week, you think?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely. I'll be there Saturday. I think I'm going to go. So.
Nice. All right, Daryl.
Nothing super exciting, obviously. But I did actually finally start watching Breaking Bad.
I think my wife and I have been saying that we are the last people on the earth to watch it.
For whatever reason, it took me years and years to break down and actually watch it. And I spent years in Albuquerque, so I should really want to see it. But,
that's true.
You know. Fantastic. Every bit as good as advertised. I just finished today. This afternoon, the finale of the second season. So apparently, everything's about to change on me, from what I've read. So
well, can't say anything
because I don't know anything.
It's okay. All right. Well, I am the last holdout. I'm gonna watch Breaking Bad and Shawshank Redemption all on the same day.
If you've lasted this long, I mean, Daryl, if you have access to the current final batch of episodes, then you'll be able to watch the whole thing right through, which I think is certainly ideal.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking at this point, that my goal is to finish so that I can actually watch the last episode when it airs.
That's good. Yeah. I've watched the first couple episodes myself, and it is it's amazing how the show just is that good. You know, lives up to my expectations every time. They do just really spectacular stuff. So I'm excited for you currently, Daryl, and excited for you at some point, Dave. Possibly Mac too. I don't know where Mac is. That is Breaking Bad.
No, I just it was earlier this year. I mainlined all four seasons on Netflix, right. And it's really great. And Daryl, there's good stuff in your future. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Although I don't like Skyler.
Season five. I think what they originally called the first half of season five. I think now they're just calling it season five. This is available on Netflix.
Yeah, so, Mac, just showed up.
I have, yeah. It was just the first half, so it was only a couple of episodes. But, I caught up on those two just like last week, I think.
Oh, but you saw the first half of season five?
Yeah.
The first eight episodes. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Was it eight episodes?
Yeah, they're eight episodes.
They go by quick. Yeah.
Felt like two.
Yeah, I should be able to get to – because it's five episodes or seven episodes or something to finish out the series.
It's eight for the last half and then eight to finish here.
So they've got seven left, right?
Six left, and boy, they have a lot of ground to cover in six episodes. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just I'm trying to project forward. I think it's doable for me to actually get there.
I think you can. It's October. Probably it'll end, and you could probably watch a season a day. So that should you should get there pretty
quick. Well, yeah, theoretically. But football season is coming up. What do I do?
Oof. The age-old dilemma, Breaking yes. Bad or football? Breaking Bones or Breaking Bad?
Yeah. All right. So I had nothing else to add, but one of these glorious days, it will happen, and I'm looking forward to it.
But it took me long enough to get to The Wire, Dave, so you'll get there.
But you do make a compelling case. I'm so close to just having the entire, you know, the entire experience ready just to plow through, you know, and not have to wait for anything. So we'll see. All right. Well, for me, I guess in non-movie news, I buckled in and I plunked down my pre-order for a next-gen console. I decided to pull the trigger. The Xbox One. Right. I mean, I can't. I just purely on I simple stuff. Like I like the controller a lot, and the games seem to appeal to me more. I think Sony looks like it's got a dynamite console for sure. But I don't know. Just the other kind of stuff just appeals to me for some reason. I just tend to like the games there, and they seem to be ripped from my id. So I've been steadily accumulating GameStop credit forever, and I was able to put like close to $350 down towards it. So
nice.
Still got some grinding left, but I want to get this thing paid for. So yeah, so I think all their turnarounds and whatnot have swayed me. I was gonna sit it out for a while, but. Yeah, I'm down. I like, and I'm probably more interested in a lot of the entertainment capabilities, to be honest, too. I think that's where I am trending as a consumer of home video content. I think I want to see more, I like the all-in-one box idea. So
that's really how they've been marketing it.
They have, and so I'm interested to see what comes of that. I think that kind of speaks to me right now more so than pure gaming, perhaps. So
you have cable again? You didn't for a while,
do.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. So we always did, but it was like tiny package, and then we upgraded a little bit. There was just a deal going on. We got a few extra channels, some super fast internet bump up, and free HBO, and it was for less than we were paying for Zilch. So it was kind of a no-brainer on that. So
I can see where that definitely fits in with your your lifestyle. Then if I had an Xbox, I'd be able to pay to watch Netflix. So
right, that's true.
It's got to be appeal. But
that's right. That's true. So, So we'll see. Definitely a couple games for sure that I'm interested in right out of the gate. So, I'm pretty excited. Just as far as a tech nerd, should be cool. Very interesting to see both companies kind of exchange haymakers, but they're obviously pursuing. It seems like they're going in different directions, pursuing different strategies. So that'll be fun to see how that all shakes out. So. But who knows when it's launching, so whatever. But that is it for me, so let's move on. Stuff we got for the site, Mac, what do you got?
I am slowly working my way through season one of Elementary.
Is that slow going? Is it just like another procedural?
Kind of, yeah. This is the Americanized version of BBC's Sherlock. And
Lucy Liu?
Yes, Lucy Liu is Watson. Joan Watson, mind you.
Right.
And it's tough. You know, it's supposed to be about Sherlock Holmes, but really it's just eccentric TV detective. There's not very much about him that's classic Holmesian. The setup is that he is a recovering addict who's a consultant for the NYPD, and she is like his handler who's there to watch him 24/7 to make sure he doesn't start using again. And so it borrows a lot from House, actually, with talk of the drug use and the way he's really, like, snarky with everyone. He can, like, read people and know how they think based on their behavior. So and instead of, like, eyeing all the little details around a crime scene, he instead studies people and studies how they react to things. And so, you know, so you got a little bit of a House. You got the mentalist going on with, you know, the human behavior So yeah, it's so generic.
I'm glad that there's finally a TV show about a detective with quirks.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
You've been waiting for that. You're right.
Totally. Everyone's so well balanced on TV. It's great to see someone who has, has some problems that they're trying to work through.
Right, yeah. All right. That's just it. He's the eccentric detective, but he's just like all the other eccentric detectives. So I've watched the first disc, and I've got another 5 discs to go. So.
How many episodes?
22, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe 20, 23 if you count the pilot. I don't have it in front of me, but gotcha. It's a full season.
All right, Eric?
A couple things. This week, going back to the Mystery Science Theater well, I'm reviewing Mystery Science Theater, the movie. Shout Factory, of course, doing a great job with their Mystery Science Theater TV show sets. They put out a combination Blu-ray DVD for the movie, and it's a really nice package. The Blu-ray looks nice. I mean, you know, you wouldn't think that Mystery Science Theater would benefit from a huge upgrade, but of course, this was the movie, so they shot it on film, and all that stuff looks nice. This is the came out in 95. This is where they riff This Island Earth, the Universal movie. It's a solid enough episode. It's cool to see, but I think what really sells this package is the extras. Not only is there are there like 20 minutes of deleted scenes and extended scenes. There's also kind of an original production featurette, and then two like brand new half hour documentaries. One about the making of the movie, and one about This Island Earth. Which is great because, and this is, Shout has done a great job with these, all the Mystery Science Theater sets, is giving, you know, giving kind of a nice historical perspective to the movies, that they're watching. So you get sort of a bit of film history at the same time, you get to kind of enjoy the comedy aspects of the stuff. So it's really cool. It's really good. And, the other thing I'm reviewing is I'm watching seasons 1 through 4 of the British series, The Thick of It. Which is a Dave? Have you heard of this show?
No.
Well, I'll tell you. You've heard of the show. You've seen the show that it was basically inspired the American version that it inspired. This is the original kind of British Veep.
Oh, okay.
The same guy, Armando Iannucci, who does Veep, did The Thick of It first. It's not exactly the same. That, you know, Veep is very much about Julia Louis-Dreyfus, kind of the person, you know, who's running the department. The Thick of It focuses partly on this fictional department of, like, social affairs, I think it is, and all the kind of the stuff that they go through. But the real star of the series is essentially what would be in Veep, the Jonah character. So he's the prime minister's enforcer, and he's played by Peter Capaldi, who people would probably recognize now because he's going to be the next Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Right.
And it's amazing. Like watching the show before, you know, before seeing him, I think he's going to be a great doctor. He's got great presence. He's got great physicality. He's got great comic timing. But he is so obscene in the show. Like this is a, you know, at HBO, they get away with a lot of really kind of biting insults and a lot of, you know, rough stuff, but this is just goes above and beyond in every way. And the character who plays Malcolm is just, I mean, he just comes up with the most like creatively obscene sarcasm and abuse I've ever seen in a TV show. It's really, it's got a good rhythm to it. But man, it is not to watch with a lot of people, but it's pretty good. And so I expect good things from this young doctor in the future. So.
All right. Daryl.
All right, TV continues. I this week am reviewing the second and final season of HBO's Enlightened, Laura Dern, Mike White show. And I'd reviewed the first season as well, and I never actually caught it on HBO. It's a comedy that really never knew what it, that really never grabbed what it wanted to be. It's got a lot of feel-goodery, but also wants to be dark comedy. So it's basically the whole premise is a formerly high-profile businesswoman gets addicted to drugs, goes to rehab, comes out, tries to get her new job back, her old job back, and upon, getting a job at the old company back, realizes that everything's really messed up there and it's going to be her job to change it. And this first season ends with her hacking into a computer, and then the second season starts with that and goes through the final 4 or 5 days of that story. And it's a good story. It's a well-produced show. It just – it never really knew what it wanted to be. And I can see people really liking it, but it just doesn't have the it didn't have the appeal to stick around. I perfectly understand why they canceled it.
All right. Well, who wants to hear about Mad TV Season 3?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I was not a very discerning TV watcher when I was first on in 98, but I remember thinking it sucked, and it's pretty rough now. So just it is amazing how much the studio audience seems to be loving and lapping up every piece of Mad TV sketch that shows up. But you do get some great – you do get some great appearances by Sandra Bernhardt and Carrie Strug and Anna Nicole Smith. And what really kind of actually what saved this season, I will say, was Howie Long shows up to play himself on a fake talk show to talk about his new movie Firestorm coming out.
Nice. Oh, really?
So that's kind of a win. That's a win for everybody. So I got to stop short of totally dumping on it. So thank you. Thank you, Mad TV, for giving him the platform that he needed. And like his literal, like his haircut is a literal platform too. Like you can rest things on it. So, yeah. So Matt TV, not great. Wouldn't recommend it. And pretty much as lame as I recall. But that was on for a while.
10 years, right?
Yeah, and it really is shocking, like how unfunny this stuff is. I mean, it's not very funny. Or like not a single one of the recurring characters is even sort of funny. But again, people love it. So, oh well. What are you gonna do? So. Moving on, what do we got, Mac? What's coming up, right? What do we have coming out here?
Yeah, let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab, and from there we're going to scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for August 27th. Just talk about whatever we see on the list here. A lot of big releases this week. Iron Man 3 is hitting Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And The Great Gatsby with Leo DiCaprio.
Well, these are quick turnarounds on these releases.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The summer has looped back on itself.
Yeah. Wow.
I think Star Trek comes out maybe next week.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So. Like, yeah, it's insane.
Super Buddies.
Oh. In my nightmares.
The Avengers have some competition.
Yeah.
We got
the Sons of Anarchy Season 5.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to checking that out. There's a Blu-ray release of the original Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, the Disney release. I remember reviewing the newer Winnie the Pooh movie on Blu-ray, and there was a special feature that was one of the segments from the original movie, the first movie. And I remember noticing how good it looked on Blu-ray, so I have high hopes for that one.
Well, speaking of how long... There's a flat top.
Oh. Dave, tell us all about Dark Angel with Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, that's right. It's coming out now. It seems like forever ago I reviewed it. Yeah, it's also known as I Come in Peace. Kind of a little...
Yeah, when was it ever known as Dark Angel?
I don't know. In fact, Psycho Kickboxer was originally called The Dark Angel, so I'm totally confused. But yeah, I Come in Peace is what I would like to refer to.
Yeah, it's I Come in Peace. That's
right.
Totally.
It'd be better for a sleazy sounding DVD releases.
It would be. Absolutely. That's the movie where they came up with the last, they came up with like the final line and worked backwards and made the movie,
So. Absolutely. Yeah, Roger Corman style. Yeah.
Yep. So, but it's got some fun, goofy 80s thrills, and Dolph Lundgren looks spry. Although he would think that he made this before something like Masters of the Universe, because he doesn't look like the roided out monster that he was there. So I think he slimmed down for the Dark Angel. Unless it's one of those movies that was filmed 10 years ago, years before it was released and just
sat on the shelf for a while.
I can't believe it was 1990. It seems much earlier.
It does, right?
Like, it really seems like, the Red Heat I Come in Peace double feature.
I did double check to think, man, was this like his first appearance? But, this came after Masters of the Universe.
Clearly, if it's 90, it came after Masters of the Universe.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, man, what a movie.
Which one?
I Come in Peace.
Oh, and Masters of the Universe. They're all great. They are great. I do love the battle at the end where he's fighting the aliens, like, drug tube, the alien's catheter or something. It's a big central fight scene. He's wrestling the alien's catheter. So definitely some Terminator. It definitely feels like there's a lot of Terminator.
No.
Borrowing going on.
No, it doesn't. No, it's wholly original.
Yes. All right. Anything else? There's Elementary. We don't need to go down that again.
The Winged Serpent's pretty rad.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. It's not bad.
Larry Cohen, right?
Larry Cohen, yeah. Terrible effect. I'd love to see it on Blu-ray. I'll probably buy that.
Nice. Oof, possibly the worst title for a film I saw, The Reluctant Fundamentalist. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a dumb title.
Dumb title.
Got Kiefer Sutherland, and he looks reluctant on the cover.
Yes, he looks reluctant to cash the check.
Oh, I don't think he's reluctant to do
that. I do have one little bonus report from that I forgot, a little entertainment report. We having HBO, we were able to watch Larry David's full-length film Clear History. You guys heard of that?
Oh, I heard something about it.
Yeah, so it really did feel like an expanded episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. So it was, you know, it was kind of uneven in parts, but largely it was pretty funny. And he was essentially Larry David in Curb. I mean J.B. Smoove was in that, and but Michael Keaton played a deranged redneck. That was pretty fun. John Hamm was in that. So there's some fun moments. There were definitely some laugh out loud moments. An extended conversation about African American dwarves, and I'll leave it at that, as only Larry David could do. But kind of fun. All right, I just destroyed our momentum, so let's wrap this segment up. Inadvertently sounding sleazy D release of the week, Mac.
Let's see, how about Pocoyo's Circus?
Good, Eric.
I'll go with the Human Body Collection.
Nice, Daryl.
And I'm going to go Collision Course.
It's good. I'll go with Koch. I'll assume that it's mispronounced and we'll call it that. Ooh, a Christian Slater movie. I just noticed it.
Yeah.
You're still getting some work, huh?
Christian Slater's playing Ed Koch?
Yes, that's right. The role he's born to play. Okay. We know how it goes now. Ambush topics. Let's get right into it. Eric, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Actors playing actors.
I like it. I'll go with Eddie Murphy and Bowfinger.
Oh, yeah.
and whether it's he's playing whether he's playing the real version of himself, not himself, the real version of the actor, or the goofy brother of the actor.
Right, yeah. That's a probably funny movie.
The last time I remember laughing heartily at a movie Eddie Murphy was involved in, so.
Me too.
Like, actually, everyone
in
involved
in
that.
Years.
Like, you know, all those actors kind of did a good job. They were kind of fun in that, so.
This one's a little obscure. I just finished watching a couple of weeks ago. Finished watching all three seasons of the Canadian TV series Slings and Arrows. I'll perfectly understand if you've never heard of it. Most people haven't, but it's really great. And it takes place in a theater, and it's kind of behind the scenes at these people running the Shakespearean Festival. It's very, very funny. The opening scene has the character reciting lines from The Tempest after he's been done clogging the toilets backstage, and you think he strikes this big dramatic pose, and the camera pulls out, and he's actually holding the plunger in the air in his dramatic pose. It's a very funny show. There's a whole big thing where they use an actual human skull instead of a fake skull on stage, and it leads to all kinds of problems.
Excellent.
All right, well, this is a little bit off-topic, I suppose, but it works well enough for me trying to get through this. I'm going to go with the main character in The Stuntman, who's not technically a movie star or an actor, but finds himself playing an actor role in a movie as he's trying to escape the people he's escaping from. He winds up on screen, so I guess technically, union aside.
Okay.
He's an actor.
Way to negotiate those politics. Very good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. Well, my wife decided that she wanted to watch Tootsie. Hey. Tonight, so we pulled that off the shelf. One of my earlier reviews.
Nice, you had that on
DVD
the shelf.
I did the 25th anniversary of that. So yeah, so we watched part of that tonight, and it was, you know, Dustin Hoffman, of course, plays an actor who can't get work as a man, so he plays a woman. And this the movie features the I'm sure I've mentioned this many times, the cameo performance of my own uncle-in-law.
Wow, excellent.
He was a DP on the movie, and he is sitting next to Dabney Coleman in the control booth. Wow, so there you go.
That's actually very good.
Yeah.
All right. Boy.
Trivia.
You automatically know the most famous person out of all of us.
Well, he's the same guy who worked on The State, so there you go.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That's it. That's the main reason I married my wife.
That's the most interesting thing you offered up amongst all of us. So.
All right. Then I'm out. See you guys later.
All right, Daryl, what do you got?
And actually, oddly, weird cameos was what I had come up with.
Weird cameos.
So Eric's uncle already counts, apparently.
I'm done.
Now, we've talked about this one before, but not in a long time, but in Batman and Robin, the Joel Schumacher one, there's this big scene in the middle where Robin and Batgirl go to the motorcycle race, and there's a big action scene to the city with the motorcycle race, and right in the middle of it, all of a sudden they cut to a shot of Coolio.
Yeah,
well, and he's just standing there watching the race. And when I first watched this, when the 2-disc DVD came out a few years ago, I watched this and I went online to check to see if it was really him or if it was just like I was mistaken. And I found out that Coolio's character in the movie is a banker.
Did he do his voice?
Of course he is. That's the one with Mr. Freeze, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm surprised he didn't say something about a gangster's parent, Ice.
Ah.
Oh,
parent,
yeah,
Ice.
Yeah. Nice, yes.
That's a pretty good pun, you know, compared to the rest of the puns in the movie. I came up with that on the spot. So.
It's
Coolio. His name is Coolio.
Coolio. Of
course. That's why he's there.
But I wonder, maybe he's like the new Batman villain. He's the banker. And he's going to try to destroy Gotham with some sort of banking-related scheme.
Interest rates have gone through the roof.
That's right.
Nobody in Gotham could buy a house these days. Batman's got to stop it.
Quick, we need to team up with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Batman and FICA present.
And that, oddly enough, that villain is not any dumber than the ones that are some of the ones in the Nightfall storyline.
<That's right. laughs> Nightfall, yes. Man, I'm so tempted to go with Pig Boy, but we've drained that well a long time ago. So I will go to the other well that has been drained so much. Brandon Tartikoff in Saved by the Bell.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Nice. Tartikoff, the president of NBC at the time. Gang were doing, they were doing their anti-pot PSA, and Johnny Dakota was going to be their special guest, and he was turned out to be a pothead. So they kicked him to the curb, and Brandon Tartikoff stepped in like a champ.
Nice.
Did these Saved by the Bell target audience even know who Brandon Tartikoff was?
I think so. I think the Saved by the Bell target audience thought Johnny Dakota was a real person. So, so they could have used they could have used Kevin the Robot instead.
You know? So. Yeah, this
or Casey Kasem. That was the other option, I guess.
Oh, that's just good. This is an odd cameo because of the person involved, but there's an episode of Yo Gabba Gabba.
Nice.
Called Doctor. And in it, Tootie gets sick.
Yes.
And she needs a doctor. So so Plex beams. You see how easily I come up with the names of these characters.
Very good.
Plex beams in a doctor, and it's Dr. Tony, and that's Dr. Anthony Bourdain is the doctor on the Yo Gabba Gabba. And he's, you know, famous for being this, like, bad boy chef. Like, he's just, like, his memoir is filthy. There he is on Yo Gabba Gabba, just, nice. You know, telling her the importance of eating the right foods and getting lots of rest, and just always seemed like a weird fit to me.
Yeah, I'd say that's a weird fit.
I wish I watched more Scooby-Doo growing up, because you know there must have just been a ton of them.
Oh, yeah, they had that whole, like, two or three years where they had their special guest of Vincent Price or the Addams Family.
They had the cast of the Addams Family. They had the
Harlem Globetrotters.
That's right, yeah.
Jonathan Winters.
Mama Cass.
Yeah.
They had, speaking of Batman and Robin, Batman and Robin were the special guests in one.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, they were.
I think I reviewed a DVD set that had those episodes on it. It's crazy. The Joker is there, and I think the Joker and the Penguin, and they're not at all homicidal.
They're just ghosts with masks.
There weren't any cameos in the G.I. Joe season that you had worked through with cross-dressing Snake Eyes.
Oh, man. Cross-dressing Snake Eyes.
And why is Don Rickles in G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got to watch that.
I do love the idea of cameos in a cartoon. Because like, it doesn't great, have to be the person at all. It's just that, you know.
Sorry, go ahead, Daryl, right?
All right. I'll finish off with what's going to wind up sounding like two really obscure references that are really, you know, that have a lot of pull with me. So in Night Patrol and the world of 1984, when Linda Blair was a sex object somehow.
Yeah, somehow.
The unknown comic gets a love scene with Linda Blair at the end of Night Patrol.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yes. Well, not quite a love scene, but, you know, after the credits roll, you know, I mean, it's the unknown comic. He's a devil. You know what he's going to do. But they're in bed together at the end of Night Patrol, and there's no good reason why the unknown comic is in the movie in the first place, but you know, a comic with a paper bag on his head doesn't really have any place anywhere. But it was 1984, and he was popular, and he was in Night Patrol. So there you are.
I'm pretty sure his popularity had waned by 84. He's a 70s guy.
He's a 70s guy, and I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure where the appeal is. But he gets into this movie in 84, and, I mean, it's not a big part, but he has two or three scenes, including the final scene with Linda Blair in the sack.
Wow. In the sack.
Nice, Benio.
Yeah.
That's good.
No, I mean, he's a player.
He is a player. Use that reference in the sack. I mean, that's really not part of our vernacular.
I was just going for the paper bag thing, right?
Oh, nice. Oh, nice. That's well played. Okay. Mac, right? Go ahead.
Okay. This topic is ridiculous censorship. Like, for example, a movie that's, you know, edited for television or scenes cut out to get a lower rating, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
All right. My favorite of these is Glengarry Glen Ross. on television, it's especially funny. There's a couple of them. Most of the really good ones involve Alec Baldwin. There's a couple of them that are really stand out. And one is calling somebody an egg roll as opposed to a part of the body. The other is a stream of F-bombs that are all changed into flip. So Alec Baldwin screams to somebody to flip them, flip their mother, flip their sister. Flip your sister, everybody. it's absolutely my favorite television recut.
That's not bad.
It's quite brilliant.
Let's see. I'm going to see Flip Your Sister, and I'm going to raise it. Great Outdoors. Right, Great Outdoors, John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, remember that film? And mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bear Butt.
The Bear Butt, absolutely. That was not censored, I don't believe. But there's a scene where John Candy's son is in a canoe or a rowboat with the hot girl in town, you know, and they're kind of having this little discussion. And the unedited version, she says, you know, I'm sorry for being a bitch. That's what she says. In the edited TV version, it's, I'm sorry for being a frappy. I don't know what that is. I know what a frap is. But a frappy. That has been a long running. Me and my brother have often called each other frappies.
So you couldn't get away with saying that on TV now.
No. Not at all.
All right. Mine is, speaking of the state, there's a sketch in the state where I can't remember the name of the play or who the playwright is. I'm trying to look it up now. Dave, you know what I'm talking about? There, it's a Carrie Kane Silver and I think Ken Marino, and they're doing this play, and it's full of swearing in the original one, and they insert their own thing, so it's all poopy poop and hum like rabbits. I can't remember what else they say in that one.
Yeah, I just remember poop, poopy poop,
poop, poop, poopy poop.
Yes,
funny stuff.
All right, Mac, back to you.
All right, back to me. Well, I've told you before that one of my favorite TV shows of all time, if not my all-time favorite TV show, is Twin Peaks. And the folks at Twin Peaks Archive on Twitter, they came across an old standards and practices memo that had been given to the producers on one episode, and they posted this stuff from the memo. So these are actual lines from standards and practices for Twin Peaks. One was, please eliminate the line, I'm going to give little Elvis a bath. Please eliminate directions calling for a character to, quote, sniff the air, unquote.
Oh, yeah.
Please avoid drug references to popping bennies. Perhaps the phrase popping bennies could indicate something other than drug use. Consider reducing the number of blows to the face.
Well, that would make sense. Oh, you mean hitting someone. Never mind.
off-camera sounds heard must not be suggestive of sexual activity. This includes loud groaning.
Is there loud groaning off-camera?
I don't remember that, maybe.
They apparently took the heed.
But the one I really like is, please remove the word scumbag. More acceptable words are dirtbag and slimebag.
Ah. Slimebag doesn't work. Scumbag's a classic.
Yeah. Well, not according to 1990 standards and practices. Nice.
What network did that air on? ABC?
ABC.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, you never heard Tim Allen use the word scumbag on Home Improvement.
That's
so
true.
I think.
No, but you did hear him use dirtbag a lot.
Exactly. Pretty much just
a lot of grunting.
Set a stack of Home Improvement sketches next to them. I mean, think of all the loud grunting on that show. You know what I mean?
So
that show is built on on loud grunting. They wouldn't let twins. It's hypocrisy.
All right. Let's wrap it up in honor of the world's end. I'm not sure if you've done this one, but post-apocalyptic worlds that are really lame. Maybe not lame. How about post-apocalyptic worlds that you would not like to inhabit? How about that?
Is it worth bringing up Whoops again?
Ooh, you might actually have to refresh my memory.
Whoops was, of course, the post-apocalypse sitcom in the early days of the Fox Network.
I don't remember
that at all.
It was in the 80s writer's strike, the producers had taken a bunch of old Gilligan's Island scripts and just tweaked them so that it took place in the post-apocalypse instead of on an island. And they made a show out of this, and it was short-lived, as you can imagine, and it was called Whoops. It was barely watchable. Yeah, it was called Whoops because every episode began with a finger pressing a button, then it cut from there to a mushroom cloud.
Oh, nice.
And over the mushroom cloud came the title, Whoops, with a big exclamation point.
Like a UHF game show parody.
Wow.
Yeah, really.
They were seriously clever back then.
They were clever.
One episode had a giant spider that looked just incredibly fake. That might have been
the whole writing crew probably moved on to Mad TV and Fine.
Well, that's my ride. let's see. I mean, I can't think of any post-apocalyptic world I'd really want to live in.
Yeah, it's the one you want to live in.
Oh, you want – is that – you tell me. Would you want me to modify it? You have to choose one that's –
No.
The least terrible to inhabit? How about that?
That might make it harder. I mean, it's the post-apocalypse.
That's true.
I don't know if this necessarily counts as a post-apocalypse. I don't know if there's apocalypse involved. I don't remember my my Pixar mythology, but the world of Wall-E seems like it's probably not a great one to live in, at least until the end, you know, when they rediscover whatever they rediscover. I forget. It's been a while, you know. Robots. Some about robots.
All right.
Well, I'm going to go with – I'm actually going to use both of your options, Dave.
Good. Take it.
The one that you want to live in and the one that you don't want to live in.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And I'm going to go with the universe of Fallout New Vegas. So if you play the game normally, you don't have to worry about food and water. You don't have to worry about sleeping. You just go shoot a bunch of junk and fools and grab treasure. And given all those benefits and none of the requirements of living, well, it's a pretty good deal, I suppose. Then if you play the game on hardcore mode, you have to worry about sleep and you have to worry about food and water. And it's not just about shooting fools. And as fun as that might be to play, it is not – it's too much responsibility for me.
Yeah.
So,
I have a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I'll skip that post-apocalypse. But I'll take the one where you don't have to worry about eating.
Good. Well, to me, I guess, just a movie I rewatched recently. One of my a gem that I tend to like that maybe a lot of people don't like, but Reign of Fire. Remember that? The Christian Bale.
Oh, with the dragons?
Matthew McConaughey movie, yeah. I always got a soft spot for that. But a sucky place to live after the dragons had just wiped out everything and you're constantly – you run out and get crops, and then you're getting burned and eaten. So, but I still, to this day, I still think that dragon CGI holds up well.
Really?
Yeah. I would revisit it. It's probably on Netflix, buried somewhere. But and a young Gerard Butler before he went on to make terrible romantic comedies with Katherine Heigl. So, recommend it. All right. Well, that's it for this Friday filibuster. So, boy, what else to say? But thank you to our typical crew, Mac, Eric, and Daryl. Friday Filibuster, DVDverdict.com is email. Mac, take us away.
Flip your sister.